Welcome to the Catholic Link podcast, the podcast for busy Catholics. My name is Father Rob Adams, and I am very grateful to be joined by Father George Elliott. Father George, it's always great to have you on.
Great to be on, Father Rob. Thanks for having me.
A big thank you to our sponsor, the Catholic Institute of Technology, forming the next generation of saints, scientists, and scholars. More about them at the end of the episode. But this is our second episode of the month, and that is where we talk about sacraments and worship and kind of official Catholic prayery things, liturgy type stuff. And during this month, it's June, I don't know, it's June right now as I'm recording it. I don't know if that's going to be relevant later, but all the readings since Corpus Christi have been about Jesus dealing with demons. And it kind of made me realize the number one topic I get asked about as a priest is exorcism. Father George, do you get this a lot in your parish, or is it just me?
It seems to come in waves where, you know, like somebody will kind of nerd out about it and start watching some show or some podcast, and then they'll tell all their friends about it, and then they'll all nerd out about it together for a while, and then it just kind of like dies out.
Oh, really?
I think usually because I tell everybody that they just need to calm down and not worry about exorcisms.
Do you want to come here and tell people that? I'd love it if you did that. So I have the opposite problem in my parish where I get, it's not my parishioners. They're very good and they know, but I'll get a lot of calls from non-Catholics, and it'll be that either I have a demon or my house has a demon or my dog has a demon. And my favorite conversation I had with a lady was, I said, well, do you pray? Are you baptized? Do you go to church? She said, no, but I hired a team of paranormal investigators, and they said there was a demon here. And I said, well, I hate to tell you, but I can't do a lot for you. And just as a human being, I'm going to let you know that you wasted your money. But I find that there is a little bit of a kind of a fascination with exorcisms and demons and things like that. There's a couple things I wanted to do in this episode. Number one is sort of talk about the caution that I feel around that topic, and especially some of the speakers on that topic. And the other thing is what the church says and what we should do about it, right? So first off, I'm not going to name any names, but there are a number of important exorcists who write books and publish and have a lot of things to say. And it's not really my place to judge. I'm not saying that. But one thing I can't really shake out of my head is I feel like most of their claims are not things they should be sharing with people.
Yeah. I find that, you know, almost all of them will talk about like, yes, you know, if you're ever in the situation of an exorcism, like don't trust anything the demon says. And then the rest of the content is, now let me tell you all the things that demons have revealed to me.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a second. You just said not to trust this.
Right. That's the thing I get hung up on. I'm like, listen, every claim that you're making ultimately kind of boils to, and then teaching ultimately boils down to you standing up in church and saying, brothers and sisters in Christ, I have word from the devil. I want to share it with you. Let me tell you what the devil told me today.
Oof.
And I know that's mean, but I'm like, I mean, it is kind of what you're saying. And I know that there's probably, you know, a lot of them will say like, well, you know, when commanded by the church, the demons must speak the truth. And I'm like, well, you don't know that. Like you just, the way I think about it a lot is I play a lot of board games with people who are way better than me, like way, way better than me. And, or even like not a complicated super board game, like just chess. I had a Chinese roommate my first year of seminary, and he was like a super chess lord, you know? And I remember I'd be like, ha, I'm going to get him. And he'd be like, well, actually there's this rule and you can do this and bloop, 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 bloop. And then I'm like, checkmated. And I'm like, well, dang. Or whenever I go to call to complain, like about McDonald's or something, like not getting my order right. And I'm like, I got him. And I'm like, hey, you guys really messed it up. And they're like, well, actually the terms of service say this, this, and this. And I'm like, man, you guys know the rules so much better than me. I feel like demons are probably that times 1,000. Like, yeah, I know that generally the rule is God says you have to do this, so you have to do this. But you're really smart and really evil. And I don't want to take my chances talking to you.
Yeah. It actually brought to my mind, there's a quote that one of my priest friends will use pretty often from Narnia, where it's, you know, witch, don't quote old magic to me. I was there when it was written. Yeah. It's like that sort of a thing where like we try and be like, ah, we've got it all figured out. It's like, oh,
maybe, you know, maybe
really the image is the other way around in Narnia, but it's, you know, a similar thing.
Right. 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 You're kind of like, yeah, man, how do you know that? Are you sure? Are you sure? Uh-huh. Like, I remember there was someone came up to me and said that, you know, he was in the room in an exorcism and the demon had given its name. And I was like, why do you believe that? Why do you believe that? Well, because it said so. And I'm like, I repeat the question.
Still haven't given
a proof. And that's not to say they don't have anything good to say. Some of them actually have said some things I found really helpful, where they say, like, you know, they can't read your mind. They don't have that power. Mm. Like, angels don't have that power. Only God can read your mind. And I'm like, cool, interesting. Very interesting. And that I find those things can be helpful to the faithful when they're freaking out about something. Like, the devil can guess what's on your mind. He can't read your mind. That's also why he likes to guilt you over things and say, oh, look, you sinned here, because he literally can't know your heart.
Mm. Yeah.
Right. He can only see the objective facts. He cannot know your will. He cannot know your heart. And if you want to get into a precise theological term, he cannot determine the state of your soul.
So does that mean essentially whether or not you're in the state of sin or the state of grace?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean by that?
The devil can't know that. Only God can know that. So that, and it's not to say he's never wrong. I mean, he's right often because he's super smart. Uh-huh. Even though he can't read your mind, he can probably figure it out.
Literally since the beginning of humanity, he's been doing this.
Yeah. But at the same point, you know, on the same note, look at what happened in the garden. How did Eve fall? You know, she had all the gifts. Like, she was immortal. She was strong. She did not have concupiscence. She could literally hang out with God. Like, they could go for a chat, like go for a little jog in the morning, her and God, you know, drinking their Stanley cup.
I'm sure Eve had a Stanley cup.
I don't, but you know, fair. And they were also vegan, you know, like they're just like,
it was paradise. How could you not have a Stanley cup in paradise?
Yeah, like, they may not have worn clothes, but they definitely had yoga pants. And
well, are yoga pants clothes?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's another episode. Refer to our modesty talk. But like, you know, they're eating like yamwiches and like vegan eggs, and you know, they're having a great time. And yet, even with all that, they still fall. And I always would tell people, like, look, when the devil talked to Eve, notice the first thing he said. He and this is where I'm going to my other point. The devil got God's law wrong. His fundamental thing is not just to tempt your senses, right? He tries to get you to hate God. And so he does that different for different people. Eve primarily fell because she engaged in the debate.
Mm.
Right? It's not that she was just overpowered and like that apple was just so good.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, and it doesn't even say she wanted it beforehand.
Mm.
It doesn't even say Adam and Eve looked at the apple and they're like, dang it, man, that apple, that would be awesome. It's like, they didn't even think about it. It wasn't until the devil came and started talking to them that they were like, oh yeah, that apple is kind of tasty looking, you know?
So what does that look like now for average 21st century American?
Okay. So it looks like a couple of things. First, it means be a little cautious whenever you hear, well, an exorcist told me, or an exorcist said, I'm like, just be cautious. Be cautious. I believe that those guys are good men and that they are doing work of the church. But in the same way that a hammer and a screwdriver are not the same tool, an exorcist and a teacher are not the same thing. And it's important to not confuse them. But then on a practical level, I think Catholics need to be aware of what the devil does actually do. So the reason I think the devil would let people get so hyperfixated on whether or not this home is a stronghold or whether they need blessed salt or whether, you know, all this stuff, The real reason is because it draws their attention away from the way the devil actually works in their life, right? The way the devil actually works is, he's got one trick, and it's to make you hate God, like I said. Think about like what happened in Eden. The devil's first words to Eve are, did God say you shouldn't eat any of the fruits of the garden? No, that's definitely not the law.
Yeah.
The law is like this one fruit, like don't eat this. Everything else, fair game. Right? And so I think for a lot of good people, for very good and holy people who care about these things, particularly our listeners, one of the ways the devil still works in our life is a maximalizing tendency with regard to God's law. Did God say all of these things are sin? Right? Did God say all of this stuff is off limits? Well, he said this is off limits. Can't do this. But everything else is a little different. You know, sin is sin, but not sin is also not sin. So I find that that happens a lot. But also, let's be honest. The devil also has a way to tell us that that apple sure looks good, right? Mm-hmm. That the thing God tells us we shouldn't have, maybe we really do want it. You know?
Yeah, it's kind of that balance of the near occasion of sin,
mm-hmm.
right? That, you know, material cooperation is another thing that I think about where people are like, well, you can't buy from that store because they sell this thing. It's like, well, you know, if I can't buy from that store because they sell this thing, then really I can't buy from any store because they all buy or somehow support something.
Mm-hmm.
Evil, right? And so now it's all evil. And
so let's be honest.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not buying that thing from that store. And so, it's about finding that line of, you know, where is material cooperation now truly like something unnecessary?
Mm-hmm.
And where is also the near occasion of sin really a near occasion as opposed to just
a temptation?
Right.
Right, because the near occasion of sin is not sin.
Right, unless it's, near unnecessary grave, then.
right. But yeah, no, I think that that's something that, even in that situation, we're talking about like an alcoholic who goes to a bar, like you're going to fall into sin.
Like, right.
It's not that you're going to feel a temptation. It's not that it's a
near occasion as opposed to just an occasion.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so I think that and I'm not trying to say like, oh, you should, ignore the moral life. Absolutely. But I think, if we read the account of Jesus's temptation in the desert, the devil was a very good theologian, like much better than us. I'm sure the devil knows the Summa Theologica way better than any of us do. And for some people, that argument's going to be to get us off the hook to do whatever we want. But for other people, it's going to be sort of a very maximalizing tendency towards like all these things are evil. Now, the goal of both is to make you hate God, right? Mm-hmm. If you go after sense pleasures and you go after the things that you're not supposed to have, you hate God because he tells you can't have them.
Mm.
If you're being tempted to a sort of maximalizing of the law, you're also being taught that God hates you, right? That God's law is this huge burden that I'm unable to fulfill. And so I sort of resent God, like the older son in the prodigal son narrative.
Mm. Like the Jansenists.
Like the Jansenists. I find that it's just something that we don't deal with enough, that the devil, his fundamental thing is to obscure the law of God, is to obscure the voice of God in our hearts. And he has multiple ways to do that. And when we start to focus on strange things like possessions and poltergeists and whether or not you have the demon of Abaddon, I feel like we are missing this one thing, right? That the devil is there to tempt us, and it's our job to fight back and to win in Christ.
Absolutely.
Well, so that's a long way to say. I said I was going to talk about exorcisms and ended up not talking about exorcisms and just talking about the devil. But I think that this ought to just sort of give people a little bit of a refresher on who it is, who we think the devil is, what he does, and sort of what we're supposed to do about it. So I'm not saying don't read this stuff. I'm not saying it's all garbage. I'm just trying to throw a little bit of caution light at some things that might throw some people off. But I want to thank Father George for being on today. It's always good to have you have somebody else to bounce my silly ideas off of.
I enjoy being the mirror, the reflector.
Nice. Well, today's episode was sponsored by the Catholic Institute of Technology, an American Catholic research university located in the heart of the church in Rome, Italy. Catholic Tech's curriculum integrates the rigors of technical education with moral and spiritual formation in theology and philosophy. Students emerge as impactful leaders in STEM, poised to contribute to research in new technologies. To learn more about this innovative institution as a prospective student, parent, or supporter of faith in science, visit catholic.tech. Join the community of aspiring saints, scholars, and scientists at the Catholic Institute of Technology. Once again, this has been the Catholic Link podcast. You can find all of our material over at catholiclink.org. Until next time, thank you for listening, and God bless you.